interviews, and more, including state-by-state reports on the nation's premier youth organization. This is FFA Today on Rural Radio 147.
Hello and welcome to this week's FFA Today. I'm your host, Janet Atkinson. And do you know of an FFA member interested in exploring the animal systems career pathway in a new and unique way? Well, look no further than the FFA Next Generation Conferences. Those are coming in February 2020. These conferences are the first of their kind and focus on specific career pathways. The events are designed for high school juniors and seniors who want a hands-on experience and also industry-relevant experiences. You can gain access to new ideas, trends, and opportunities and connect directly with industry leaders in the animal systems sector. Now, the applications for the students, those are open now. You can go online to FFA.org, but it does come to a close on October 1st. Also, congratulations to the more than 4,000 American FFA degree recipients. Now, that full list is available online at the FFA's website. You can click on the American FFA degree tab there at FFA.org. And finally, the 92nd Annual National FFA Convention and Expo is just a couple months away, and FFA is thrilled to announce who will play the exclusive convention concerts and speak on the convention stage. Speakers include New York Times bestselling author Bob Goff and Hello Fears founder Michelle Poehler. Get rocked at concerts by CMA and two-time ACM Group of the Year Old Dominion and Brett Young. And get your boots on and enjoy all of the thrills that the world's toughest rodeo has to offer. That's Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of the convention week. And of course, Rural Radio and RFD TV will see you there as well. And now we head to the volunteer state, where building business skills has been a key goal for one member who's hard at work running his family's row crop and gypsum mining operations. It's all part of his SAE.
Hi, my name is Jarrett Mosier, and I'm from the Jefferson County FFA chapter in Jefferson City, Tennessee. My SAE consists of a family farm where we row crop around 2,000 acres of corn and soybeans. We're also involved in the mining industry. We own and operate several mines that produce ag lime as a byproduct, and we move and sell the lime throughout the east and the southeast, really, of the United States. We also bought and sold over 5,000 square bales of Timothy hay last year along the East Coast. My three ag advisors over the years have been very instrumental in my accomplishments and my success through FFA. They've worked with me night and day, and I would not be where I'm at right now without them. My father and grandfather have played a huge role in my success as a young farmer and as a person in life. Watching them as I've grown over the years and learning how they operate and run things and treat other people has really made an impact on how I live my life. My future, I would love to have ownership in the farm. Farming is my passion, and I really see agriculture as my future. FFA has been extremely important in my life. It has helped me in so many aspects, from building relationships with other people to talking in front of crowds. When I was a freshman in high school, I was scared to death to get up and talk in front of people, and my advisors pushed me and pushed me and pushed me, and it's helped me. They've molded me into the man I am today.
Gypsum is primarily used as a fertilizer due to its sulfur content, and mining for it is certainly a unique SAE project, one that won Jarrett Mosier a spot as a 2018 National Star in Ag Placement finalist. And of course, earning the title of State Star Farmer is no easy task, but with the support of his family at Scarlett Dairy Farm, John Ryan Scarlett sure makes it look that way.
I was very fortunate when I was a senior in high school to be selected East Tennessee Star Farmer and then go on to win Star State Farmer that year. It was pretty special to be up on stage with John Ryan to see him get the same thing 35 years later.
From Jefferson County, John Ryan Scarlett.
I've heard him tell stories about being there and what it was like when he got it and how he did this and being able to take a little bit of a different route and be able to be doing it on my own, and then watching my operation grow alongside the farm's operation, and then being able to actually be honored with the award Star Farmer, and him having done it as well was something that that really, really made an impact. I felt super honored. It's a special thing, and not many people have done it. So
And I've told John Ryan this, sometimes it's not about the winning, but the journey to get there.
Being Star Farmer is, to me, one of the best things that a student can achieve. FFA was started by 33 farm boys from 18 states, and what they did, they all had operations of their own, and they really understood what agriculture was about. But at that time, it was just about farming. Agriculture has grown beyond just the boundaries of farming, but getting back to those roots and being able to compete as a Star Farmer for a region and being named that for a state is really something special, because it embodies where the FFA started and where it's grown from.
Thanks to the Tennessee Farm Bureau for that story. And on top of his farm work, John Ryan was also elected to serve as a state officer for the 2019-2020 school year. Good luck to him in his year of service and, of course, the rest of his team. Well, don't go anywhere. We'll meet a member who's taken a tradition passed down by your grandfather and used it to bring FFA and agriculture into a few unexpected places. That's next right here on FFA Today. Thanks for tuning in this week. And now we hand things over to FFA Today contributor and host of the Off-Farm Income Podcast, Matt Breckwald, who introduces us to Olivia Charles, an Illinois member and chapter president who raises rabbits for show, for breeding, and recently for taking a step back into medieval times at local Renaissance fairs.
Joining me today is Olivia Charles, and she is coming to us from West Carroll High School in Savannah, Illinois, where she's serving as her chapter's president. Olivia, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Now, when you're not at school, when you're at home, are you on a farm, or are you in town, or are you something kind of in the middle?
So I actually live on a beef operation, and then my SAE is that I have rabbits. Mm-hmm. And then my mom is a veterinarian, so I spend a lot of time with animals.
Wow, very cool. Well, how long have you been part of the FFA?
I was actually in 8th grade Discovery FFA as well. Mm-hmm. So I had 8th grade, freshman, sophomore, and then this will be my junior. So this is my 4th year.
Okay. And here's where I always ask the most obvious question in the world, but why did you want to be part of the organization?
So for me, my dad was an FFA member when he was in school. And then our FFA chapter actually has a barnyard zoo that we put on every year at the elementary school, where all the high schoolers bring their animals to show, and we get to come out and see them when we were in elementary school. Mm-hmm. And that always really, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, I want to do this when I get older.
And obviously things have been going well for you. You've just recently been selected to be your chapter's president.
Yep. Just this past year, I served as the JV officer reporter. And then this year I was elected to chapter president. So I'm really excited about that.
Very cool. So what made you want to go into the officer portion of serving in the FFA?
I've always kind of wanted to be in a leadership position, I guess. I've been on our chapter's parliamentary procedure team. We won that Discovery year. I haven't been the president on the team, but I was a secretary, and I was always super into that. And then I just try and do like as many contests as I can every year. And then I ran for president.
Well, congratulations on that. That's wonderful. And I always like to see students who are achieving in that way. I think it takes a little extra, right? If you're going to go and be part of the leadership for your chapter. I mean, there's already a ton to do. Well, let's talk about your supervised agricultural experience. So here you are, you're on a cattle operation, but you found yourself going into rabbits. So let's talk about that. Tell us everything you've been doing.
So I raise Flemish Giant and Dwarf Hotto rabbits. I use them for show rabbits. I breed them and I sell them as pets. I sell them to other people as breeding animals. We use them for our own household as meat animals. And then I've just recently started taking the hides and tanning them to sell pelts as well. I use basically, there's a lot of different uses for the rabbits. I guess the reason I actually went more towards rabbits instead of helping with the cow-calf operation is something that I can do pretty much by myself. I operate all the rabbits, and having large animals, you know, you're probably going to need more help from adults to manage them on a day-to-day basis while you're going to school and have all those other activities. Where rabbits, I can pretty much do all by myself.
Very interesting. Well, when did you start? when did you get your first rabbit?
My grandpa was raising Flemish giant rabbits before I was even born. So naturally, I got into them as I got older. And I'd go up to my grandpa's house, and we had a few rabbits at our house. And they'd kind of stay with me over the summer, and then grandpa would take care of them over the winter. And now grandpa has a few rabbits, and I have most of our breeding stock at my house. So.
Very interesting. So he was doing this. He inspired you. And man, yep. It sounds like you are... I mean, you've got a very interesting business model going here, and you're taking advantage of every single part and piece of the rabbit, it sounds like. When did you start selling them yourself? You started raising them at a certain point in time, but when did it develop into a business for you?
Well, I just started selling a large number of them a couple of years ago, kind of when I started the SAE. I've been posting them online, and also kind of I have a couple buyers in my area that buy 4-H projects and such from me.
Okay.
But the guy that I bought my original breeding stock from actually just retired. So the bloodlines that I have are becoming more valuable.
Oh, I see. So just simple supply and demand. There's just less of them out there now?
Yeah.
Very
so people
cool.
are coming from, I recently had a person from New York. I have lots of people from Iowa and Wisconsin. People drive a decent ways to get those bloodlines.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Great job. That's a wonderful position to be in. Now, did you grow up eating rabbit?
I did, actually, because every year we kind of breed them over the summer. And then in the fall, we'd pick what we wanted to have, like the higher quality rabbits to breed for like my fair stock next year. And then whatever we had left over, we wanted to get down in numbers over the winter. So they would kind of be the pole rabbits. They didn't quite make the cut. And so then we would use them at home for food.
Okay. Really cool. I like this idea. And then when did you start, you know, dealing with the pelts?
I started processing the rabbits myself a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And then as I was doing that, it kind of occurred to me that I was throwing away these beautiful pelts, and I'd seen people that had tanned rabbit hides before. And so I just thought that would be something cool to get into where I could use every part of the rabbit. And also make a little money while doing it.
Okay. So have you learned how to tan these pelts yourself, or do you outsource that?
There was a guy in town that my dad knew who used to run a taxidermy shop. So he helped me get started, and then I've also watched quite a few YouTube videos. My first ones didn't turn out quite as planned, but now they're getting a lot better.
So you're doing it all yourself, the tanning and everything?
Yep.
Very cool. Now, how are you marketing the pelts? Who is buying these, and what are they using them for?
So for a long time, I had a big stack of them in my basement because I couldn't find buyers for them.
Uh-huh.
I looked into like selling them on eBay, but there's not a lot of people really going on there to buy them. So recently, I have had people going to Renaissance fairs.
Okay.
And I'm trying to get them to take my pelts with them and sell them because people buy them to make like the Renaissance clothing and everything.
Got it. They're stitching pelts together and making some clothing that looks like what somebody would have worn in the Middle Ages or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool.
Very cool. Wow. Who would have thought, you know, and you know, it's funny, Olivia, you know, as farmers and people involved in agriculture, we always say that if you wear it, you eat it, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter what it is. Everything at some point comes from agriculture, but I think you're proving that directly.
Yeah. I just think it's really awesome to like watch too, just how we can use every part of them for something beneficial to someone.
How did you discover that there was a demand for your pelts at these Renaissance fairs?
It was kind of just talking to people because we'd go around and every once in a while I'd be having a conversation. It would come up and I'd be like, oh yeah, I have a whole stack of hides in my basement. I don't really know what to do with them. I've just been making them because I think they're cool. And then I met a guy who's like, oh, hey, my buddy goes to Renaissance fairs, and I know they sell them there.
And so you're just kind of opening that market up. You're just kind of getting that figured out now?
Yeah. I'm hoping to be able to sell more of them in the future.
Mm-hmm. So how do you keep your rabbits? Like, are they in a barn? You have some sort of an outbuilding, or where do you keep them?
Yep. Actually, part of our garage has rabbit cages in here right now.
Okay.
And then I have wooden hutches outside that I keep some rabbits in, and that's kind of where I started having everyone. But then as I expanded, I bought a truck box, like off the back of a semi.
Okay.
And I have that lined with rabbit cages.
Oh, wow.
And then one corner of it, we actually, my dad and I went in there and worked together to insulate it.
Okay.
And I can hang heaters and heat lamps in there, and I have babies all year long. negative 30 degrees this winter, I had baby bunnies in there and they were completely fine.
So how many rabbits are being born on your place a year?
Last year, I had 120 kits, is what they call baby rabbits.
Okay.
And this year, I've already surpassed that.
Wow. And so you're already past that and you can go year round?
Yep.
Wow.
I breed them all winter.
So you're marketing these all over the place, and do you just have buyers just constantly rotating in to buy these rabbits up?
Oh, yes. Especially in the spring, everyone's going in to get like their 4-H projects and their breeding stock for the year. Right now, I'm in a little bit of a low for the market. Mm-hmm. I haven't had as many people, but I'm hoping once I'm just starting to get into fair season right now. And so I go to fairs and I put 4-sale signs on all the cages, and so I try to get rid of rabbits that way. But then, of course, I end up buying new stock at fairs. So
really cool. Fascinating stuff. Well, that is great, Olivia, and I love your spirit, and I love that you're innovative with this. Now, as you look forward, you're going into your junior year. You look forward, you're going to be done with high school here in a couple years. How does what you're doing in terms of running your own business and creating your own resources like this, how does this influence the way you picture your future?
Honestly, I think this project has made like a huge impact on me. Just having to have the responsibility of managing all these rabbits, like on a daily basis, my parents don't see a rabbit unless one is sick or something and I have to talk to about it with my mom.
Okay.
It's completely me, and I think that'll really, you know, help my leadership roles in the future, I think.
Very cool. And what are you thinking when you're done with high school? Is it off to college, military, work? I mean, what do you have in mind?
I'm planning on going to college. I'm not exactly sure what yet. It's going to be in the agricultural industry for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not exactly sure.
Well, I want to ask your advice really quick, Olivia, and I want to ask this for those future FFA students out there who might be listening. When it comes to wanting to do a project, and maybe your parents are saying, well, that all sounds great, but it sounds like it's going to wind up being a lot of work for us. I mean, in your situation, you, like you said, your parents never see a rabbit unless you need veterinary help from your mom. So you've proven to your parents, no, I've got this. This is my project, and I'm going to take it, and I'm going to run with it, and you're not going to have to worry about it. What advice would you have for another student out there that they could get to that point where they could really prove it to their parents that, no, I'm very serious about this?
My advice would be if you can just start with like if you're going to do a rabbit project, if you just start with one or two rabbits and you prove that you're the one that like takes care of them all the time. Because personally, I think that it just makes the project mean so much more to you when you're the one making all the decisions, deciding which rabbits you want to buy, which ones you want to sell, when you're breeding them. Like, I can't imagine not doing that because that's just the best part for me. But yeah, if you just take care of them on a daily basis, show the interest that you want to maybe go to a show, go to more shows, buy more rabbits, start breeding them. I mean, my parents have been really awesome about it. Every time I want to buy a new rabbit, they'll drive me to Chicago or wherever I need to go to pick it up. Like, they've been really beneficial to me.
Well, Olivia, I love your business. I love what you're doing. And thank you so much for sharing it with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
For FFA Today, I'm Matt Breckwald.
Stay tuned. We'll meet the Minnesota Farm Bureau's FFA Advisor of the Year coming up right here on Rural Radio 147, Sirius XM. Welcome back to the show. And finally today, we're off to Minnesota, home of Sean Lindor, advisor for the Grand Rapids FFA chapter and the Minnesota Farm Bureau's FFA Advisor of the Year.
Jim Bartles here, along with Sean Linder, who is the Minnesota Farm Bureau FFA Advisor of the Year. Received that foundation award back in November, Sean, wasn't it?
Yeah. Eric Mosel from Arrowhead Farm Bureau sent my name in, and I guess they decided I was the one this year.
All right. Well, congratulations on that. Let's find out a little bit about you. I know, 17 years in Grand Rapids, but let's back up. Where'd you grow up, and what got you going into FFA and ag education?
Well, I attended high school at Battle Lake, Minnesota. I actually was in the FFA from 1993 till 1997 under the advisement of Blaine Larson when he was there. Graduated from high school, went to University of Minnesota, Crookston. Not really thinking about going into ag ed at the time. I decided to go natural resources forestry route, and ag education the fate bug for that kind of bit me when a person from the University of Minnesota Crooks and staff called me up one day after knowing he was going to be out for a while with illness, and asked if he wanted to, if I wanted to teach his class. And I said, well, I'm currently in your class, so I didn't really understand that at the time, but through a little bit of prompting, I decided to do that. I had a lot of fun with it, and I decided to maybe teach ag ed at that point. So I went to the University of Minnesota to get my master's in ag ed after completing my degree in natural resources at Crookston.
I know that you're in Arrowhead Regional Farm Bureau. You're a member also. Why and how long have you been involved with Farm Bureau?
Well, as soon as I got to Grand Rapids, there was a lot of Farm Bureau influence in the area, and they approached me about becoming a member, and I thought that was a natural thing to do to give my students an opportunity to be exposed to other people in agriculture around the area, and knowing that they had a lot of positive influence in not just the local area, but the state and the national level. I thought that would be a great leadership model for my kids to follow, so I think it was a natural fit. I've actually been a board member of the Arrowhead Farm Bureau for quite some time as well, so I've really enjoyed that position.
Sean Linder's our guest again, FFA Advisor of the Year for Minnesota Farm Bureau. Let's talk a little bit about Grand Rapids FFA, probably some signature projects and events that you do, and how many members, a little overview.
Yeah, Grand Rapids is located not necessarily in a traditional agricultural area in sense. We don't have the cow, sows, and plows that a lot of the other people in Minnesota.
Cow, sows, and plows.
That's right.
I've never heard that before. That's good.
Yeah, so up in our area, we have a lot of natural resources. We have a lot of forestry, a lot of tourism that comes up to enjoy our natural resources through hunting and fishing. We do have a few animals, but it's mainly horses, a few head of beef, and that's really about it. So we focus on companion animals and then a lot on our natural resources. We have anywhere from 50 to 60 FFA members every year. So we're a very active chapter within Minnesota. We do a lot of career development events. So I teach 18 different types of classes at Grand Rapids, even with what we would say is maybe not your traditional agriculture. A couple of our signature events that we have in Grand Rapids is we've got almost a 200 acre school forest. We utilize the fourth graders in the fall for an education day out at the school forest, where we have our FFA set up presenters or do the stations themselves to help students understand more about forestry and the role in natural resources. We bring that same group back in the spring to plant thousands of trees to help replace some of the trees that we actually harvest as a woodland stewardship class every 2 hours a day in the fall semester. So we actually harvest up there to help manage and execute the woodland stewardship plans for that 200 acres that we're responsible for at the school forest.
Great project. Sean Linder, good to have you here with us. We appreciate it very much. Congratulations once again.
Thank you very much.
Sean Linder, FFA Advisor of the Year for the Minnesota Farm Bureau, for the Ingsted, Minnesota Radio Network. Jim Bartles reporting.
Well, that'll do it for this week's show, but if you have something that you'd like to share on the program or an idea for something that you'd like to hear more about, just let us know. You can shoot us an email at FFAtoday@FFA.org or give us a call, 855-RR-147. That's 855-776-1147. Until next week, I'm Janet Atkinson with FFA Today on Rural Radio 147, Sirius XM.